is 79 degrees in the Twin Cities. Now, I am not one to gloat. It's not me. No. But sometimes I do like to gloat. All right. It's the second inning in the Twins game. And Jonathan Lowe, is it still the second inning? The Twins are up 10-0 over your Kansas City Royals. The second inning.
I, as a member of the Kansas City fraternity now and forever, and sorority as well, I apologize to everybody on behalf of the Royals. They stink tonight. They stink.
What was the score in the St. John's game again? Was it 90?
98, and it's not getting to 98-0 over at Target Field, and I'm telling you that.
St. John's beat the College of St. Scholastica, I believe, 98-0. I suppose if you did sort of like a ratio, perhaps.
Yeah,
perhaps we're headed to comparable.
98, if you divide that by 7, that is 14 scores, I believe. I believe that's.
Well, anyway.
Yeah, that's 14. That's 14 touchdowns. So right now, the Twins are basically up on the Royals 70-0.
There you go. Okay. See, it is sort of comparable. And it's the second inning. All right, folks. Just couldn't resist getting a little dig in my friend Jonathan there. And gosh, you guys have had success. Give somebody else a chance. All right. Well, this year is the 25th anniversary of the nation's first charter school opening. And it is also a time when more and more young people in Minnesota are taking advantage of options to get free college credit in high school. Joining us to talk about this and other things as well as in addition to, how to get off to a good school year or good start to a school year. Is Joe Nathan, the executive director for the Center for School Change. Joe, how are you?
Great to talk with you, Esme. Thank you. How are you?
Absolutely great. Well, listen, let's talk about charter schools because you have been a big supporter and have really studied this issue and how it's going in Minnesota right now. Tell us about how charter schools are faring.
Esme, the idea started here in Minnesota, and I apologize a little bit for my scratchy voice here, but excuse me. The idea is very simple. We ought to give people a chance to create new kinds of programs as long as they're willing to be results and we allow choice within certain limits. And those are fundamental American principles, not just educational principles. So the very first chartered public school opened 25 years ago in St. Paul. We now have more than 150 of these schools located throughout the state of Minnesota, urban, rural, and suburban. And the number of youngsters going to these schools is increasing year by year. And many families are finding that they're valuable options. But we also see school districts all over the state responding in constructive ways to the fact that families now have options. And that's a good thing, too. We want something that's not only going to help the youngsters who attend the chartered schools, we want something that's going to help improve the overall system.
Well, let me ask you, Joe, because I think that there's still, even though it's been 25 years of charter schools and more kids are taking advantage of it and more families are taking advantage of it, I think people are still confused about exactly what is a charter school.
We agree. There is still some confusion. So thanks to, the good neighbor of the Northwest for letting people know more about this. A chartered school is a public school open to all. It's non-sectarian, so religion is not allowed. You can't promote a particular religion. And it's called a charter because that word means contract. So there are what are called authorizers, organizations such as school districts or colleges and universities or the Audubon Society that have the power to say, we'll review a proposal from people and we'll either accept or reject that and then give them a contract. So they have 5 years to achieve certain goals, and if they achieve those goals, the contract is renewed. And if it's not, if the goals are not met, either the contract is canceled, or some new people are brought in to run the school.
And let me ask you: can anybody start a charter school?
You have to have at least one certified educator a part of the planning group, and you have to have licensed public school teachers participating as teachers in the school. So a variety of people can start, but as a part of the planning team, there has to be at least one person who's a licensed public school educator here in Minnesota.
Okay. And who kind of keeps track of this, and how do they get their money?
The dollars follow the students. We have a principle that was established in 1985 with the post-secondary options law, which allows high school kids to earn college credit while they're still in high school. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. But we have a principle that's been established, which is that the dollars follow students. So, for example, if a youngster moves from the Edina district, lives in Edina, but moves from the Edina district into Minneapolis, or a youngster lives in White Bear and goes to public school in St. Paul, the dollars follow the students. And the same principle applies to charter public schools. If there is a youngster, for example, in White Bear who is going to charter public school in St. Paul, then the dollars follow the students.
All right. And so that's how it works. And who keeps track that these schools are doing the most important thing, delivering on their promises? Because most of these charter schools have an edge to it. Maybe they focus on an immersion in a certain language. Isn't that true? I mean, don't most of them have sort of a different take on or different focus?
Sure. Thanks for asking great questions. These are the kinds of questions that I hear constantly. So thanks for asking and getting some clarifying information here. In the charter world, we have what are called authorizers, and these can be local school districts. We have some that are local districts. They can be organizations that are nonprofit that have registered with the state, such as the Audubon Society, which also authorizes, or Pillsbury United, which is another example of an organization that has been approved by the State Department of Education, or we can have colleges and universities, or we can have what are called organizations set up whose sole purpose is to be authorized. For example, the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers established something called the Guild, and they are, give them credit, they are the first teacher union in the country that asked for and received permission from a State Department to be an authorizer. Authorizer is the organization that reviews proposals, can say yes or no, because there's no automatic right to create these schools. Reviews proposals, says either yes or no, and if they say yes, they monitor the performance of the school, and after 5 years, they'll say you can either continue, or we need to close the school down, or we can bring in some new people to run the school. We've had about 165 charters in operation, and we've had 78 that for one reason or another have been closed in the last 25 years.
All right, and in the most part, I mean, I know that there have been some schools that have run into trouble for financial reasons or whatever, but overall, how would you say the system is working?
Well, I'd say overall, it's like America. We have these fundamental freedoms, and people come from literally all over the world because they recognize the freedom to try out a new idea. If you have a new idea, I mean, that's how we make progress, whether it's cell phones or the radio or television or whatever commercial product you can think of. We are here where we are in America because one of the fundamental freedoms has been to say, I think I have an idea about how to do something better, so I can do that as long as I'm willing to be responsible for results and as long as I operate within certain principles. So overall, the chartering idea is doing really well. We have a number of innovations which we can talk about. We have the Midwest First Montessori Junior Senior High School. We have a new way of operating for teachers where teachers literally can run a school. They can be the majority of board of directors in a school, so we call that a teacher-led school. It's like a farmer's co-op. We have, in greater Minnesota, we have farmer co-ops. They're run by farmers, and they organize with each other, and then they hire somebody to run the business operations, but it's the farmers who are in charge. Some medical clinics operate that way. It's the doctors who are in charge, and they hire some business people to help them run it, but they are in charge. And that same principle has been applied in public education with teacher-led schools. And now one of the nice things that's happened is that the district schools have picked up on this idea. And so union leaders and charter advocates work together, and the legislature has said, let's go ahead and have some teacher-led schools within districts. So overall, I'd say the idea is doing really well. We have some very distinctive schools. And as somebody said to me not too long ago, when you've seen one charter public school, you've seen one charter public school. So we don't really get into the idea of which is better, district or charter. It seems to me that's a little bit like saying which gets better gas mileage, rented car or leased car. It's not a really meaningful comparison. So our Center for School Change, tries to learn from the most effective schools, whether they're district or charter. That's how we think we can make progress in Minnesota. And in a couple of minutes, if you want, I can give you some examples of how we've really made progress because we offer both district and charter options as public education in Minnesota.
All right. We're chatting with Joe Nathan. He's the center director of the Center for School Change. Joe, I want to take a break because I do want to get into this, you know, the latest in terms of getting kids. We can talk a little bit more about charter schools, but just an update on getting college credit for free when you're in high school, because with the bills for college that are coming in, it's astronomical, and this is something that more and more kids are taking advantage of. So keep it here, folks. We are chatting with Joe Nathan, the executive director for the Center for School Change. All right, folks, we are chatting with Joe Nathan, the executive director for the Center for School Change. Anything else you want to say quickly about charter schools? Because I would want to talk about this other subject because it is so important.
Well, I think that you've made the key point that these are public schools open to all, non-sectarian, that are located throughout the state of Minnesota. And if people want more information, they can go to www.mncharterschools.org or they can go to centerforschoolchange.org. Both places have information about these schools, and they are located throughout the state of Minnesota.
What shifting gears here, tell us, because people may not know about this program. You've been touting it for years. How can people, it almost sounds too good to be true, how can people get college credit for free, and how often are people taking advantage of this, kids in high school?
So thanks again for asking about this. This is almost too good to be true, but it is true. Starting in 1985, the Minnesota legislature adopted a law called Post-Secondary Enrollment Options, also called PSEO, that allows high school students, now starting in the 10th grade, to take courses on college campuses or online, and there's a new law that we'll talk about in just a minute about the online courses, but they can take free college courses on the college campus or online, earn simultaneously college credit, and it's free. The tuition, the books, the lab fees are free, and one of the things that's happened is in part because of these new options with the dollars following the students. High schools all over the state of Minnesota, rural, urban, suburban, virtually every high school in the state offers the opportunity for students to earn college credit for free right in the high school. It might be advanced placement, might be international baccalaureate, might be called what are called college in the schools courses. But students, since 1985, have had the option, now starting in the 10th grade, actually in some places the 9th grade, to earn free college credit by either taking courses in the high school, that starts in 9th grade, or on a college campus or via internet, and that starts in 10th grade. And it is almost too good to be true, but it is true.
Let me ask you this. Is this available? You said it's available like in basically any high school, but it's also now there's an online component. How does that work?
Sure. So one of the things that happened was that we had some districts that have been very cooperative with these programs and some districts, unfortunately, that have not. So a number of parents, including some parents from Fulda and other parts of southwestern Minnesota, came to the legislature this year and said, look, we think since our taxes paid for the school's computers and the facilities that we ought to have be allowed to take courses online using the school's computers. And many schools were saying fine, but some schools were not. So the legislature heard the testimony from various points of view and then said, we agree. Those computers, the buildings themselves have been paid for by taxes. Students ought to have access to it. So the new law, effective this fall, is that high school students can earn college credits by taking PSEO, post-secondary enrollment options courses, online, and the school district and the school must provide space in the building and must provide access to the school's computers and software to allow students to do this. And this is very important because not everybody has the transportation to get to a college or university. And I want to emphasize that these courses can be in career and technical fields. So a youngster can take courses on welding or on auto repair or a vast array of things, as well as more traditional academic kinds of courses. So there's, as the saying goes, something for everyone. And as you said, it's free. It's almost too good to be true, but it is one of the things that makes Minnesota really distinctive around the country. Several of us recently spoke at a national conference here, and people from all over the country said, wow, this is amazing what you're doing in Minnesota.
So in other words, you can take these, even if it's not offered to you, let's say you're in a school district that's not close to a major university, you can still, if you're in a school district in Minnesota that obviously has computers, you could still take an online course at
exactly right.
a university. Because obviously, and some people may also not have the you know, certainly there still remains an enormous problem with, internet speeds and internet access throughout the state of Minnesota. And so I think that's something that's there too. But every kid can do this free of charge.
Exactly right.
All right. And are the school districts, are they up on that?
Well, another great question. The Minnesota Commissioner of Education, Minnesota Commissioner of Education, Brenda Casilius, sent a note out last month telling school districts this is a change in the state law. You need to do this. A couple of years ago, because families were not getting up-to-date information, we work with some people throughout the state of Minnesota, and the law was changed, 2015, to say that school districts must provide, I'm quoting directly, up-to-date information to families and the students on their websites and in information that they give to families. So the law says that families are supposed to be informed, but we did some research in 2016 that found 90% of the districts were not providing this information. And so we work with the commissioner, got the information out. I'll give credit to the Superintendents Association and to the Rural Education Association. They work very conscientious about saying to the members, look, folks, we need to get this information out to families. It's a state law. We need to cooperate with the state law. So we went back a year later, and 90% of the districts were providing information. But this is a new part of the law, and it was just passed in May. So many districts don't know about it, which is why I'm so grateful to CCO with you know thousands and thousands of listeners to help get the word out. It's important for families to know what their rights are.
Right. And if somebody is having trouble, I mean, are they? Is there any place they can call or access, or do they just have to, you know?
Literally every week I get calls and emails from families about these kinds of issues. So people can go to our website and they can reach me at joe@centerforschoolchange.org, or they can talk to Paula Palmer at the State Department of Education. There's information in the State Department of Education. If you do a Google search for PSEO, Minnesota Department of Education, there's contact information. You can make phone calls. You can send emails. And I want to say, by the way, that our organization strongly supports courses offered in high schools as well as PSEO. We don't think there's one best approach to this. Some kids want to stay in the high school. They don't want to do an online class. They want to take a course offered from the high school, and that's great. And because of the research, because the students and families have stepped forward to talk about the value of this, we now have youngsters who are literally earning a 1 or 2 year degree or certificate from college or university before they graduate from high school. And that can save between $5,000 and $20,000 in cash. So it's enormous savings. Plus, we also know that youngsters who participate in these programs are much more likely not only to graduate from high school, but also some form of college or university, or earn a 1 or 2 year certificate or a 4 year degree.
Wow. Okay. And that is so big. And obviously the cost, especially when you got, you know, families, obviously with more than one child. I mean, it's so important. Great information as always. Joe Nathan, the executive director for the Center for School Change. Thank you so much for joining us.
Esme, thank you so much for making this information available to your listeners. And as I said, if people want more information, they can go to www.centerforschoolchange.org. We don't charge. It's free information. We'd be delighted to give it away to people.
All right. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, much more ahead here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Coming up, we're going to give you some weather. Then after that, a real treat. I don't know if a lot of you folks remember a wonderful restaurant that was there for years in St. Louis Park called the Lincoln Dell. It was absolutely a treasure. And now there is the Lincoln Dell Cookbook. And we're going to chat with the author of that cookbook because this was a legendary bakery and deli. The matzo ball soup was just fabulous. And there's not really anything quite like it anymore, at least in that part of the Twin Cities. So we're going to visit with the author of that cookbook coming up next. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 7:36 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. And we're hoping to reach Wendy Zelkin Rosenstein, who is the author of the Lincoln Dell Cookbook. And I am just hoping that we get her because I've been looking forward to this. The Lincoln Dell was a restaurant that was many, many years in St. Louis Park, and the granddaughter of the folks who ran the Dell has published a cookbook of the best loved recipes. And this was a place that I really enjoyed going to, and it shut down, you know, a number of years ago. And actually, I didn't realize that there were three restaurants. I just remember the one in St. Louis Park. But gosh, it was a good place to go, and amazing to have access to all of these recipes. And it's the foreword is actually written by Tom Friedman, who is the best-selling New York Times author and commentator and reporter. And anyway, I hope that we are able to somehow connect with them, or maybe we'll do it at another time, because just looking at these menus and then also the prices on the menus are terrific, too. Some of the older menus have some of these old prices that are just, you know, things were a lot cheaper, like a plate of spaghetti, $1.40. Yeah, we all remember when you get like a plate of spaghetti for $1.40. And looks like we are probably not having too much luck, Jonathan. Is that the case? At the moment, yes. Okay. All right, folks. Well, I do want to let you know that still ahead, we do have the one and only Professor David Schultz, who will be talking politics. I've been off for a couple of weeks. I just needed a little break. I didn't really go anywhere. I just sometimes, you know, it's kind of nice to take a vacation where you don't really do anything, because in a way it's relaxing. If you take a trip these days, I think it can be. I think it can be very, very stressful, especially with, you know, air travel. I think it's just a nightmare these days, and so difficult. So I just kind of hung out and just caught up on some rest, and I had all these projects I was going to do, and I didn't do any of them. But oh well. You know, sometimes you just got to kind of relax and take it easy. We are still trying to reach the author of the Lincoln Dell Cookbook, and still working on that. I do want to invite you to tune in to WCCO-TV Sunday morning, 6 a.m. The one and only Micah Gustinac and I will be live at 6 a.m. in our studios, the TV studios, and then we will rush out to the State Fair. And it'll be kind of neat. We're going to actually do an extended interview with Senator Amy Klobuchar for our Sunday morning shows. We usually have two guests, and there are a few guests that you always kind of wish you had more time with. Senator Klobuchar is one of those guests. And frankly, what I told one of her staffers is that one of the things that I really, you know, it's always great to interview her. And she's always, first of all, she's a very easy person to interview because she kind of explains even the most complicated things in a very simple fashion. But she's also very funny, and she has these great anecdotes, sort of behind the scenes anecdotes of, you know, what it's like to be in Washington, and that she tells you, you know, and I feel like, well, gosh, I'm sure people would love to hear about those things. So we'll actually have the time tomorrow to do that and talk with her about that. And then please visit us at the State Fair booth, so you can actually watch our newscasts at the WCCO-TV booth. And then afterwards, they have a really cool thing where it's really popular with kids. You can go in to the booth, and they have set up like basically a simulated newscast. And so kids and adults, I mean, we've had a lot of adults, it's not just kids, come in and they can, you know, do a newscast and read a newscast, so they can be, you know, like Frank and Amelia, or pretend to be like a reporter like me, or a sportscaster or weather forecaster. And, you know, there's usually a big line. And then after I get off the air at 11 o'clock, I'll go from 11:15 to 11:45. So if you want to do it with me, I'll be happy to do it with you, or do it with your kids, you know, do the newscast. And then they put them up on the YouTube channel, so you can actually see them and watch them afterwards. And it's a lot of fun. Or else, if you just want me to coach, I won't be offended if you don't want to do it with me. But it's kind of a fun way to something special you can enjoy at the Minnesota State Fair, and see if this is something maybe your kids want to do. And some of the kids are really good. I mean, they're really, really, really good. So anyway, please join us at the State Fair tomorrow at 10:30. Also want to keep you updated on that fabulous Twins game, Jonathan. What's that score now?
Not talking yet.
Jonathan Lowe, our studio coordinator that I've worked with for many years now on Saturday nights. You are a great man, a very nice human being with a major character flaw in that you are completely committed to Kansas City sports teams. And while I try not to hold it against you, I do. And year in and year out, your Royals have been doing pretty darn well, and it's time for somebody else to do well. Right, Jonathan?
Well, that would be Cleveland, who is running away with a division right now.
I know, but Minnesota is doing really well.
They are.
I mean, aren't they one of the hottest teams going?
They are. This has been a surprising season because of how bad it was last year.
Right.
And so now that they're in the wild card seat right now, not just in the wild card race, if the season ended today, they'd be in. So the fact
are they ahead of the Yankees now?
They're not ahead of the Yankees. I think they're a game back of the Yankees for the first wild card spot. But they right now, the Twins own the second wild card spot. So they would be in. They would play the Yankees in New York if the season ended today. New York won today, so the Twins won't.
So they'd have to play the Yankees.
They would, yes. And
that hasn't gone so well for the Twins, for those of us who can remember the last time they were.
I said this a couple weeks ago with Steve and Eric when they were on the air here. Wouldn't it be so ironic and so sweet for fans of this region, fans of this team, if by chance the Twins and the Yankees got into the playoffs, they were both the wild cards, the Twins had to go to New York. Twins have been a better road team this season than a home team. And how sweet would it be if they went into New York and took the New York Yankees out of the playoffs?
That would be so sweet.
It's got to happen at some point in time.
It's got to happen.
You can't lose to the Yankees every single stinking time.
Right.
At one point
in time,
you got to get past.
But the season, I mean, we're coming to the end here. I mean, season's drawing to a close.
Yeah, I think it ends a month from either. Trying to think when October 2nd is.
It's not much longer. So there's still time.
There's still a month to go. let's see. The 30th would be 28 days. So yes, 1 month from today.
Okay. So there's still a lot of time.
Yep.
Still a lot of time.
It's going to end early October.
Right.
Anyway. But Twins have a shot. And there are a lot of teams that are now in the chasing position, including the Royals, who are just getting bombarded tonight. The pitching is just awful.
Because we were talking about it earlier, is that the game had just started. You know, the game started at 6:10, and by 6:20, it was 5-0. I was like, what happened? Am I reading that right?
They had four runs in the first inning. They had four runs. I think they had three runs before an out was recorded. That's how bad the starter was tonight for Kansas City. It was just abysmal. And he was a spot starter. He wasn't anyone that was big into the rotation. But still, you got to come with a better effort than that.
Right.
So right now, as it stands, the Twins are a game and a half back of New York for the second wild card spot. They are a game and a half up on Baltimore and Anaheim for the second wild card spot. It looks like they'll win tonight, so they'll be a game back of New York. I think Baltimore and Anaheim are both playing right now, so who knows how that's going to go. But they're going to keep pace with New York. They're going to try to maybe host the game. Again, I think in this case, they got to go on the road. I think they're a better road team. They're starting to play better at home.
Yeah,
but
it's looking pretty good tonight.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh,
and right now Cleveland is just running away with a division. They've won 9 in a row. They're beating Detroit right now, so they're going to stay. It looks 8 up on the Twins, so the division doesn't look like it's going to be happening. But the wild card is a very real possibility.
Right. Well, I have a tie for my favorite Twins players. My tie goes to, and there's an age span here. I think there's like a 20-year age span. Byron Buxton, who's really fun to watch. I mean, the guy just flies. And then Bartolo Colon, who is also really fun to watch. And aren't they like 21 years apart or something crazy?
I'd have to look that up real quick. It sounds like you're right. I think
Buxton's like 23.
22 or 23, and Colon is, I think, 43
right.
or 44.
And Byron Buxton, just, you know, watching him, he looks like just watching him run, it's just the epitome of a graceful athlete. I mean, he just is extraordinary. And then you look at Bartolo Colon, who I've pulled up here. His weight is posted at a 285, which you know what that really means.
Yeah.
It's more than that.
That's probably three bills.
He's listed at 5'11", 285, which probably means he's really 5'10", 5'9", and what, 300, right? I mean, isn't that the way they do it?
I'll tell you one thing. Big Sexy, or as I like to call it, also call him the Big Roly-Poly, he's been effective.
How can you do it, though? How can you play at that level with that kind, at that age, with that kind of a, shall I say, physique?
That's the million-dollar question. I mean, this guy has been, and remember when he came in the league, he was an ace. He was a slim dude. He was an ace for Cleveland.
Yeah.
And he's been around so long that you just wonder, you know, guys like Jamie Moyer and R.A. Dickey, they pitch into their 40s. Or I know Moyer did. Dickey's late 30s. But you just wonder, how can you keep your body in tune for that long?
Well, it's not in tune. Look at him. But he can do it, you know?
That's the best rebuttal I think I've heard all night is how can you look at him and say he's in tune? Yes, they are 21 years apart. Buxton, 23, okay. And Cologne is 44.
Right. Well, anyway, it's a lot of fun.
And a big roly-poly.
He's a big roly-poly. But anyway, it's a lot of fun, and it would be fun. And I think I was actually at the last Twins-Yankees playoff game.
I think that was 2010.
At Target Field. Was it that? I mean, it feels like it was 100 years ago.
Yeah, I think that was the last year that the Twins made the playoffs was 2010, because that was my first year here, and right. I do remember that.
I remember it being at Target Field.
Yeah,
and it was
and Target Field opened up in 2010. So
okay.
I believe that was the series was that series 2010.
And is it would be three games or would it be?
No, this will be a one-off. You get in. You play one wild card game. The team with the better record hosts. Winner goes on to the league division
series.
Oh,
no.
Yes.
That's scary.
It is.
Is that the way it works? I did not realize that.
It's a scary proposition. And I'll explain, I guess, real quick, the role that you can get on. As a fan of the Royals, 2014, they finally got in the playoffs. It's been 29 years since they got in the playoffs. They've been searching through the deserts for so long. They were down. They were hosting the wild card game against Oakland. They were down late in that game, I want to say by three or four runs. They ended up tying it in the ninth, or tying it before the ninth, went into extra innings. They won it in the 12th. Improbable win for this team. I didn't think they had a shot. They went on to then sweep Anaheim, the best team in the league, in the American League.
You were happy that year.
I was very happy that year. I was very happy until the end. But they swept Anaheim. Then they swept Baltimore in the championship series. And then they got to the World Series. If the Twins can get to the game, if they can get to that game, they can get on a roll. Any team in baseball can get on a roll.
Well, they're on a roll now, so... Against those Royals. All right, Jonathan Lowe, thanks so much.
And that's where we end the segment.
Yes. All right, folks, let's take a quick break. A lot more ahead here. Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, Professor David Schultz. Oh, it's fun to dream October dreams. And one can only hope that a month from now, the Twinkies will still be in it. It certainly looks that way. Esme Murphy, along with studio coordinator Jonathan Lowe, we will try and rebook the author of the Lincoln Dell cookbook, because I know that Lincoln Dell has a lot of fans here, and this was a very, very special place for a lot of people, and a lot of people enjoyed going there. So it has, you know, great pictures of all the old menus and the cakes and the pies and just... a really kind of a fun, kind of almost scrapbook-looking thing of just all kinds of great pictures. So I hope we will successfully rebook that. Coming up, of course, the one and only Professor David Schultz of Hamline University. So much to talk about. Really, you know, the dynamic with Hurricane Harvey has really changed a lot that is going on in Washington. You know, it was just a few weeks ago that the president was talking about shutting down the government if he didn't get that wall. Well, now it seems fairly obvious that the money that would have gone to any possible wall is going to need to go to some kind of rebuilding effort. In addition to Houston, I just saw a devastating story in one newspaper that talked about all the little towns up the coast that are just practically wiped out. I mean, this thing is so big and so widespread, and some of those towns are still underwater. I mean, the floodwaters receding in Texas. Also, the president going to Texas, going to Houston today, meeting with victims. The president saying, hey, he feels that the flood relief is being very well received and is going as well as possible. Obviously, the situation is a disaster. The question is, to what extent will they rebuild? And the president, in his budget originally before this happened, there were proposals to severely cut FEMA. And this, I think, is going to need a big government response in order to help out these folks. There's really only one entity that can do it, I think, and I'll ask Professor Schultz about that. And it's got to be a big government response. And back in Sandy, it was Senator Ted Cruz of Texas who was arguing against a big government response. Well, now Senator Cruz has a very different view of things now that it is his state that is so hard hit. So we will ask and visit with Professor David Schultz on that matter. Always great to chat with him, and haven't talked to him actually in a couple of weeks since I've been off. So keep it here, folks. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.